Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 23 of Season 5 Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this week is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back to the show, Jeanette.
Hello! What an honor, what a joy, what a privilege to be here to discuss how busy an airport is the week of Christmas.
Not now, later. you see, I got you this time.
That's right.
So, episode 23 begins with Carmine still fuming and ends with John trying to explain the confusion.
Trying,
yeah. Well, he I think he does it convincingly, but we'll get there. So basically, the last 2 days we've been talking about Dennis Franz just yelling at John, explaining why his airport is a little too busy and why he doesn't have time for John McClane. But, you know, no one's ever got time for John McClane. Not even Holly.
Exposition layered into an argument.
There you go. It's true. But like I said,
argumentative exposition, maybe that's what you call it.
Basically, we ended things yesterday with Carmine pushing the red button and saying, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies. And two of his policemen show up to escort John out. And, you know, we ended things yesterday with I keep saying Sipowicz. I keep thinking that in my mind with Sipowicz saying.
Yes, well, you should. It's Carmine, basically Sipowicz.
That's right. With Carmine saying, before I have to, you've thrown out. And he continues today with, of my goddamn airport. Once again, going back to the my. You know, it's very important that this is Carmine's airport.
And I have to point out once again the Chicago-ness of Dennis Franz in that it's not a goddamn airport. It's the goddamn. Adding the T in there, which just makes it far more impactful.
Well, maybe that the reason for that is so that it can get through the TV sensors.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
He didn't say goddamn. He said goddamn.
Goddamn.
Yeah, I think this scene, I think this week would be a little difficult to air unedited on network TV.
Yeah, even today. Which is a shame because then you miss all the exposition of what's happening, why, where, and how he knows him and what he's from. And then, yeah, it's
that's true.
It's hilarious.
That it is, for sure. And then, you know, John starts walking out, not happy, but he's accepted the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to be in a place where he's not wanted. So I might as well leave. Not going to have to stick around here.
That's and, right.
You know, and as he's walking out, he turns around. And I love this. And I know that this is the phrase you told me that was the reason you wanted this whole week. You know, and here you get it right in the middle of the week. You know, we're Wednesday, hump day. You know, John turns around, looks over at Carmine, and once again, we get to see him standing right in front of that picture window with all of the fake snow behind him. And John says, hey, Carmine, let me ask you something. What sets off the metal detectors first? The lead in your ass? Your brains.
Yes.
And as he walks out.
Quite possibly one of the greatest lines.
Yeah, it's a great line.
And ever delivered.
It's a great line. And as he walks out, he mumbles under his breath. So, I'm trying to figure out why is he saying that he has lead in his ass? Like, what's the point? Is he basically saying you don't want to get up and walk around? Is that the idea that you're...
Basically, we've talked about how Carmine has not gone down to the crime scene, has not looked at it himself. And the phrase, you know, lead in your ass is traditionally reserved for someone who's not doing anything, who's sitting around, being lazy, being a layabout. So yeah, I think that's the general consensus. Which, as we know, lead in ass may set off a metal detector. In brains, probably won't set off a metal detector.
Probably
doesn't
not.
Matter. Doesn't matter. You can't dive into the logic of it because that would take away from the impact of
correct.
It. So it works great. It's a great line. We used to yell it at each other in college. I don't know why. We found it hilarious. It's a perfect line.
Yes, it really is. It is definitely a great line. You can see that Lorenzo's a little bothered by this comment. You know.
Yes.
But the question is he bothered by that, or is he bothered by the fact that he calls him a fat as he walks out? You know, which of
He's
the two of
bothered
them
by
is
the
he
fact that he
bothered?
knows McClane is right. McClane is right. He knows something is up. He knows something more to this is happening. He knows he should be doing more, but he's also very busy.
Yeah. He's busy because he's got reindeers flying in, you know, from the petting zoo.
But not from the North Pole, only from
No.
the petting zoo.
But again, as we said yesterday, maybe the petting zoo is in the North Pole. You know, we have to
Dang.
give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, I'll try. No
Could be,
promises.
it could be, could be. And so he mentions metal detectors. So
yes.
When do you think a metal detector was invented?
Oh, 50s, the 1950s.
Well, the first industrial metal detectors were in the 60s. Okay,
okay,
but
okay.
They had early metal detectors that were used to find unexploded bombs in France during World War II in 1919.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. And if you want to go further back, in 1841, there is a professor named Heinrich Dove who published an invention that he called the differential inductor. It was a four-coil induction balance with two glass tubes, each having two well-insulated copper wire solenoids wound around them. And he would use that in order to try and find pieces of metal.
Of course.
That was this then was the first magnetic induction metal detector. You know, and it was also considered the first pulse induction metal detector. Now, I'm not a physics person, so I don't know what it's read, but it sounds cool.
Listen, my knowledge of metal detectors is they're what you use for hunting treasure.
Yes.
You need, if you're going treasure hunting, you need a metal detector. Usually it's on the stick with a wide base and you sweep it across the ground. That's what I know about them. In terms of the airports, when you put them into an arch and you have to walk through them, that's a whole separate thing.
Right. And what's very interesting is that one of the most famous cases of someone trying to use something like a metal detector was in July 1881, the famous Alexander Graham Bell.
Oh.
He actually was trying to locate the bullet that was lodged in the chest of American President James Garfield. So I find
interesting.
It interesting. I find it interesting they didn't call a doctor. They called, it's actually funny I say they called Alexander
right.
Graham Bell.
Well, because if you're going to make a call at that time, the only person you can call. We got to get someone in here to do this. What do? Call somebody. Well, the only person with a phone is Alexander Graham Bell. All right, call him.
Well, it was apparently Alexander Graham Bell and the White House. You know, he had
right, yeah.
there was a bat phone. There was a bat phone. Who do we call?
This is all very logical.
Let's call Alexander Graham Bell. Hey, you just created this phone thing. You have any way of maybe finding a bullet that's stuck in someone's
what
chest?
What else do you have? Funny you should mention, I just invented a thing that will find metal. What do you call it? I call it a metal finder.
Unfortunately, I mean, Garfield died, so I don't know what that says about Graham Bell.
Listen, you know. This was the first round of it. It wasn't perfected yet. He did the best he could. Also, given the day and age they were in, even if he found it, that doesn't mean he can do anything with it. But
that's
yes,
true.
I've detected
No, then you cut it in. Then you
chest.
Then you call a doctor.
The doctors didn't have a phone yet. So they could
you
call
send,
Bell.
You
he
send a runner to a
it.
Doctor.
That's all he can do. We yeah. found it. There it is. It's lodged inside his chest. Well, all right. Now what do we do? Nothing.
I don't know.
We found it.
Yeah, it's a metal detector. It's not a magnet. It's not like going to pull it up.
Exactly.
You know. I wonder if people. I wonder if in.
It, you should have been calling a doctor, but I'm afraid you didn't call a doctor. So.
That's true. That's true. But a doctor wouldn't have been able to have done anything because he didn't know where the bullet was.
That's right. Listen, there's a lot of. There were mistakes made.
I wonder if they use magnets nowadays, you know, in medical procedures in order to try and, like, find pieces of bullets or fragments of things and stuff like that. Now, I never
like
thought about it.
But probably also has to do a lot with, like, does the magnet drag it through other things that it shouldn't be, you know, going
awesome.
Through?
Well, that's
exactly
why you connect. You connect yesterday's discovery of x-rays with today's discoveries of metal detectors and magnets, and you try and figure out what's the best way to do it.
These are old questions when you have a doctor on the show. These are not questions I can answer.
I can't answer them either. You know, a week and a half ago, I sliced open my leg, and luckily, I have a neighbor who's a doctor, so I sent him a picture. And I said, "Do I have to go to the emergency
Nice.
room?" And he says, "Nah, come over to my house. I'll stitch it up for you." And
There you
I
go.
got 12 stitches on the spot.
That's why you are friends with a doctor.
That
Everyone
is
should be
correct.
friends with a doctor who can do that kind of stuff.
That's right. That's right. For him, it was nothing. He just he's an emergency room doctor. So for him, a little gash, no big deal. But what I know is that the new knife that I bought actually, not just cuts vegetables, but it also cuts flesh.
Okay. It's a good quality knife.
I learned my lesson that I shouldn't be putting it in a plastic bag, and I put the bag down to open my front door, and as I was putting it down, it just sliced through it cut through the bag and
Jeez.
sliced through my leg. So,
Good Lord.
but I'm still here to talk about it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you got your stitches next door, so you're
That's
all
right.
set.
That's right. But he doesn't want to be bothered taking the stitches out. He told me I have to actually go to a medical facility to get it out.
Understandable,
He's like
understandable.
he basically is probably saying to me, it's fun for me to stitch you up, but I don't have to get out.
Yeah.
Right. So then we talk about metal detectors. So those were metal detectors of trying to find pieces of metal, in sand, like you and I mentioned earlier, the people, walking on the beach trying to find precious metals that people have forgotten in the sand or whatever it is. But then you have the metal detectors that are used for security reasons, right? So obviously security lately, over the last 20, maybe even a little more than that, but approximately 20 years, is becoming increasingly important at events and specific locations. And so therefore they have metal detectors that play an important part in ensuring that people are safe by detecting concealed weapons such as guns or knives, unless they have a porcelain Glock 7 that they can, a fictional porcelain Glock 7 that they can get through. It's also used to detect foil wrapped drugs and precious metals associated with jewelry or antique theft. Interesting. I never thought about it from that perspective. And there are basically two types that they use. They have the handheld metal detectors and security ones, and then you have the walkthrough metal detectors, or what are known as knife arches.
Yes, okay.
Okay, which those you mostly find in airports, but they now have them in many public buildings, sports grounds, and unfortunately, there's even schools and colleges that have it, because of the dangers that they have. Now, have you ever seen the movie Teachers with Nick Nolte from 1984?
No.
So all the way back then, they had a school with a metal detector. So, it's not like it's a
Sure,
new
yeah.
thing, that there could be problems with it, Right. So, having metal detectors are essential when there's a need to screen a high number of people quickly, which is why they use them in airports. Even though
Yes.
in airports, it takes time because they make us all take off our shoes before they make you walk through it. When you just have to file through, it makes it a little easier. I mean, I don't know what it's like by you, but for me, when I go to the mall, they have them also.
Really?
Yeah, they have them here in
Certain
the mall,
cities, yeah, certain cities have them.
and when you go to the hospital, you have them also. There's a lot of different places here that have them.
Yeah, stadiums, any kind of concert
Yeah.
hall or arena, yeah, all that.
Yeah. How many people do you think an average, walk-through metal detector can screen in 1 minute?
Wow. In 1 minute. You know what? I'm gonna say no because they kind of a walk-through one though, not the one that you have to stand and it scans you.
No, a walk-through. It's called a single metal detector arch.
I'm gonna say 60. I'm gonna say one a second.
And you are correct.
Hey, all right.
Yeah, which means that you can get 3,600 people through every hour. But obviously the handheld ones are a little more cost effective, but they use those more in places where they don't have as many people that they need.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a problem. So that's why a lot of places have random searches and stuff like that in order not to check everybody, which is anyone you think is possibly suspicious.
Well, and
It reminds me of Unbreakable, another Bruce Willis movie, where he's a security guard And you know, they have the whole thing where they're either patting people down or you know, because he gets the feeling that there's somebody who has a Glock 7 porcelain gun. I don't know. We basically see that John, you know, walks out of there, and then we see the two coroners. So we see two men talking. And you can see that they're wearing on their jacket says coroners. And one goes, "Any idea on this guy?" And the other one goes, "That's someone else's problem." And then John like looks at them, and then you see them like go by him with the gurney. And then John makes a quick dash to the budget rent-a-car area, which I give them a lot of credit that they actually use a real name here, because in the rest of the movie everything is fake. All the airlines are fake and stuff like that. So, you know, the fact that budget allowed them to use their name there
Well, because
is pretty good.
as he walks up to the budget counter, the lady is saying to the gentleman in line, "Oh, and your car is ready,
Your
your keys."
car is ready.
I don't know if you've ever
Sign right
tried
here.
to rent a car at an airport, but it never goes smoothly for me and anyone I know. It
I've
is
done it.
the most complicated process on the face of the planet attempting to rent a car. It takes forever every time. So
Because they
budget was
want you to
like, yeah.
sign so many different waivers.
Yes, but it was like, yeah, well, you can put us in the movie, and in the movie, all we see is your car's ready. Here are the keys. No, that's not how it goes. I'm not fooled. I'm not fooled, budget. I'm not fooled by this.
And she also, you know, next week we'll find out that she actually even hits on Bruce Willis.
That's right.
So,
Just the
you know,
facts, ma'am.
I don't know.
Just the
Just the
facts.
facts, just the facts. And then he leans over the counter as she's saying, "Your car's ready, sign right here." And he goes, "I need to borrow this and this. I'll bring it right back." And then he grabs, you know, what looks like a piece of paper and
Ink pad.
an ink pad, right?
Which, thank goodness, she had both those items right there on the top in easy reach for him.
Well, because that's what you need in a you know, in a rent-a-car area.
An ink pad and
I
blank paper.
wonder. I don't know what you need a notepad for, or the ink pad for. What do you need an ink pad for?
Stamping,
Does that, what do you need,
paid
stamp it?
or returned, or don't return this empty.
Nah, I don't know. I mean, the paper I can understand, but I don't know. Nowadays it's all,
All
you know,
electronic.
it's all electronic. That's right. And then he grabs his stuff and runs off, and she screams, "Hey!" And he doesn't pay attention. He continues.
Half-heartedly screams, "Hey."
That's right. Well, because she was taken by surprise. Why would someone steal,
An
you
ink pad.
know, and which maybe she should call the, you know, airport police.
The two that just dropped
Someone.
him off right there, yeah.
That's right. That's right. And John starts running, and we see him on the outside already. And he screams, "Hey, yo, hold up, yo." Now, let's go back one second. You know, John walks out of the police area. Okay. Now we see a lot of police around there, and we see the coroner basically walk through that area with the body. So
Yes.
they took the body
Through the mainly
from.
populated area of the airport where all the customers can see them wheeling a body around?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that one out. It's a little strange.
It is.
You know, like what do you got under that tarp? Oh, nothing,
Surely
nothing.
there's like a behind the scenes tunnel or a back alleyway they could have used instead of going right through the main, right by the
No,
conference desks.
but again, for me, the strange thing is that why, you know, John said last week, "I'm gonna go up to see the captain." You know, making it sound as if, okay, we got to go upstairs, we got to go there, but it's basically right next door.
This is another one of those situations where, and honestly, it might be a side note of doing it minute by minute, but often movies that take place in an enclosed environment, right? Whether it be an airport or a building or a Nakatomi Tower or anything like that, an enclosed area.
Nakatomi.
Nakatomi Tower. I would love to have a map or a diagram that shows the layout and where everything is so that you understand when the character is going from place to place. If you're just watching this movie straight through, maybe it doesn't occur to you, but watching it minute by minute, it sure would be nice to see like an overview, a map in the airport of the airport with a "you are here," a little "you are here"
Yes.
button.
I completely agree with you on that one. I would love to do that. Even for Die Hard, I tried figuring that out. I was able to figure out what things happen on which floors, but you can't get a layout of the floors itself. You know, so, oh well, Guess we'll have to figure that. See, that's why I take my hat off to Jay and Mark. They were able to get the entire seating of everybody, all the cons on Con Air.
Yes.
That they know where everybody was sitting. And I was like, wow, that's just amazing that they were able to do that. And Mark spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
But that's Mark.
Yeah.
That's why it's great.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile for people like us to it's good to hear that someone did that. And then so back to John running after the coroners, and then he goes, "Hold up, boys, hold up. We gotta check something." And then one of them looks at him, "What are you doing?" Because he opens up the he un unzips it
Yes.
and like pulls out the hand, and then he goes, "Pretty
A
gruesome."
pretty gruesome. What are you doing? I'm doing a pretty gruesome drug. What I like, and actually, forgive me, backing up to the minute before, the score comes in right after John delivers the lead in ashtray in brains line.
Yes.
The score kicks in to remind you that, okay, John has just realized he's in this alone. He's got no backup. He's got to figure this out. So when it steps out
Yes.
here, the score kicks back in as he is encountering the coroners. And the score lets you know, oh, this is kind of a fun scene. Look at how silly
That's right.
John's being. Because the score is
That's
all
right. And we get to see the light bulb above his head.
yeah, it is. Yeah, John has realized that now it's up to him and he's got to figure out how to do this. And the score lets you know it's going to be okay. The, yeah. The two
That's
coroners
right.
are fantastic.
Yes. And only one of them is credited, but we'll get there in a second. We shall get there. So basically, we got a look at what Cochrane looked like last week, which was pretty gruesome. Which again, I never noticed before I did this, before I watched this
Right,
minute.
right.
Because, something that it flashes by in literally a second. So they did a nice job of letting us actually see that. But so the rent a car girl, right? So she's credited,
Oh.
and yeah, her name is Lauren Letherer.
Well, 'cause she has a couple of
Okay.
lines. It's not just this with the
That's right.
hey and the your car is ready.
That's right. That's right. And she has 20 acting credits besides this movie, which I guess isn't a lot
Well.
considering this movie was from 30 something years ago. This movie is from 33 years ago, so.
Wow. How did that happen?
How did it happen that 33 years passed?
Yes.
Or
How?
right.
Why?
But what's very interesting is her most recent performance was in the movie To Leslie that came out last year.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, that was the movie that Andrea Riseborough, I think that's how you pronounce her last name,
Yes, okay.
Andrea Riseborough, was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress. Lauren Letherer plays her mother.
Wow.
I just found that interesting. It just like it jumped out at me when I was looking at like her credits
Huh.
and stuff like that.
That's really
So
interesting.
yeah, I think so too. And the second person that talks this minute is the morgue worker whose name is Ed DeFusco. Okay, who again, I would have expected him to have a lot more IMDb credits. He only has 12 credits, but they are big credits,
Oh.
or they're movies that I recognize at least. Okay, so first of all, he's in this movie as the morgue worker. He was in Tango and Cash as
Oh,
a
okay.
federal agent.
Sure.
He was in Red Heat as police photographer.
Okay.
He was in Unlawful Entry as plainclothes
Okay.
cop, and he was in Roadhouse as Oscar. So, he only has 12 credits, but I just listed,
They're big. They're
five of
big.
them
Yeah.
that they're recognized because I did recognize it, not just from this movie. So, but the second guy isn't. I don't find him anywhere.
Somebody's friend standing in.
Apparently, I mean, we talked about this the I think the second week. The maintenance worker who opens up the door to the for John to get into the luggage area was this homeless guy who was panhandling on the street that they decided to give a job to.
Wow, all right.
So
That's cool.
it's possible that yeah, and that's his only credit in a movie. And last week we got him also standing there grinning. So, he got to do some fun stuff
That's
too.
right. I like that.
And I didn't mention this yesterday, but the person who came in to interrupt Lorenzo, where he said not now later, right? So Captain Lorenzo's secretary, her name is Drew Barrymore. Okay.
Really?
Yes. Dru Barrymore, Berrymore.
That seems
Sounds
shady.
like a porn name, doesn't
Yes,
it?
that's exactly what I was thinking. Like that's not a mistake, right? That's not a coincidence. That's not a, well, this was also my name. No, that's a, I chose this name, but I'm spelling it differently.
Yeah, well, apparently she has a okay, her real name is Nicole Tanya Hilbig. She was born in Germany.
Okay.
But she changed her name because she apparently resembles Drew Barrymore.
Does she?
Or at least someone thinks she does.
Okay.
I
I mean, sure. Whatever makes her happy.
mean she has 243 credits on IMDb.
That's a
So I
lot.
do have a feeling I have a feeling that she is a porn actress. Because that is a lot,
That is
yes.
a lot.
Yeah, looking at some of the names of these titles, yes, that is who she is, and I'm surprised that she got a job on this movie.
Did Rennie Harlan know her from something else?
I don't know. I don't
Hey,
know. I
whatever.
wonder if she had credits before. No, this is her very, this is her first movie credit.
Oh, that's fascinating. All right.
And then all the rest are that her next movie credit is 4 years later called Kittens 6. And I'm just going to stop there. I'm not even going to go through any of the other names
Okay,
of
all right.
any of these things. No need, but that's just really weird that that she showed up and said, "Here, I will play
You can yell at me till you
I
do
will
what you
play
want.
Laryngeus."
If there's anything
Yeah,
else you need me
exactly.
to do. Oh my
Yeah,
gosh.
we're not going to go there.
Hilarious.
Yes. Yeah, the name just stuck out of me when I saw it
Yeah.
said Drew Barrymore. I was like,
Yeah.
okay, that's really weird.
Well, and then when you
And now we
list
know
the
why.
number of credits, I'm like, wow, okay, that's a lot of credits.
Yeah. She's been a very busy lady.
Hey, good her.
Okay, if you say so. Right. So basically, John is trying to explain to these coroners, and he starts saying with all the confusion in there, and then like that's where he gets cut off here.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really have much to say to them today.
Today.
Tomorrow, maybe he will explain to them what it is that he's referring
Why
to.
he ran up with a stolen ink pad and piece of paper.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to wait and find
All
out.
right.
All right. Do you have anything else for this minute besides before we get to the script?
Consult my notes. No, just how much I love the sentence. Let me ask you something. Sets off the metal detectors first. The lead in your ass or the rock in your brains? Yeah, fantastic. And the perfect little bit of Dennis Franz, as McClane leaves the office, where you clearly see on his face, he's like, "Oh, I know this guy is right, and I'm concerned that there's more to this, and I need to do something." That little moment that he gets quietly by himself after McClane's out, and he no longer has to go toe to toe, where he can just quietly think to himself, "This is going to be a thing, and I need to get ahead of it." I like that moment, and it's just Dennis Franz being awesome.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that's great. All right, so the script has a few little extra things here. Not much, but there's a little bit here. So it says McClane comes out of Lorenzo's office. So he has the phrase about the metal detector. And it says McClane comes out of Lorenzo's office steaming. He walks down the corridor, looks back at one of the stocky airport cops, fakes a smile. When the guy turns away, McClane punches the wall. Then a clatter announces the passage of the more guys, the body on their gurney. McClane moves aside, watches them, thinking, getting an idea. He passes a rent-a-car desk. A girl is lost in a romance novel.
Oh.
McClane says, "Excuse me." He reaches over, gently takes typing paper and a stamp pad. Hey! And then it says in the parking garage, McLean catches up to the Moore guys as they reach their wagon. Whoa, guys! Very quickly showing his badge. Gotta check something. Before they can react, he's unzipped the bag, yanked out the guy's right hand. And that's where it stops.
So, pretty similar. Yeah. Pretty similar.
I mean, I like the descriptive nature of it. It's pretty similar. I like the fact that she's, I guess the people in budget wanted to make sure that she's working and not sitting there reading a novel.
Yes. You can use our name in the movie, but our cashier is going to appear to be very competent and right on her job, and that it will look very easy to rent a car. I'm still not fooled, budget.
So people still will go to budget. There. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Airport Airplane Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, which I know you like misadventures, about something that happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to either an airport or an airplane or something aviation related. So, Janae, you have a story for us?
It was interesting trying to choose one. There's been a couple. Everyone has an airport story, right? Everyone has a story that they're...
Of course.
I have, many years ago, got stuck in Minneapolis overnight because of weather, which is always a concern anytime you attempt to fly in or out of the Midwest in the winter. I have my family going to France for a family vacation, got stuck in Amsterdam overnight because of some delays and strikes. That was an adventure as well. 2017, a flight... Trying to get out of Germany, my friend Crystal and I, we were there for a dance event, and we were taking a train to the Zurich airport from Wolfach, Germany, and we were we encountered a man in the train station who asked us how to get somewhere. He was asking everyone in the train station if they spoke French, and Crystal pointed at me and said, "She speaks French," and I was like, "I speak a little." And the guy asked me questions about where the trains were going. And I was like, well, this one's going to Zurich, because the only train I was aware of is the one we were waiting for. And he said, no, I don't want to go to Zurich. I am coming from Zurich. And I was like, well, you need to go in here and get a ticket. He was like, I'm not going to get a ticket. I said, you need to go in here and get a ticket. And he said, I can't. I have no papers. And I said, what do you mean you have no papers? Being an American, you know, papers to us, what? And he gestured to me. He put his wrists together and then split them apart and said, I cannot go back to Zurich, gesturing that he was some sort of escaped criminal or was, I'm going to assume, recently released. And I was like, oh, sir, I cannot help you. And backed away from the situation. And I was like, we are going to Zurich, which is this way. I cannot help you. In as much French as I could put together.
Good luck. Good luck.
And I was like, oh, I see why no one else in this airport wanted to help this man. So that was one. And then this past January, my family coming back from Vegas. And again, as I've mentioned, it's unwise to attempt to fly around the Midwest in winter. But my goodness, we were coming. This wasn't even the Midwest. This was Vegas got hit by that freak winter storm where they actually got snow for the first time in years. We were trying to get out of Vegas. Our flight from Vegas to Denver was delayed. No, we were supposed to transfer in Phoenix for some random reason. Delayed just enough that we couldn't catch our transfer out of Phoenix to Milwaukee. Had to then, the guy at the counter went up to the counter like, okay, the flight's delayed. Now we're not going to make our transfer flight. And he was like, well, I could put you on this one to Denver. And then you could go from Denver to Milwaukee, but you're not going to get there until the next day. And we're like, fine, whatever. And then he goes, oh, that's not going to work because there's too many. And we're like, okay, fine. And he goes, well, I can get you on one that will go to San Diego and then to Nashville and then to Milwaukee. And I'm like, sir, is there anything else that really changes things? He was like, well, I can get you to right from here to Nashville and then from Nashville to Midway. And I was like, that doesn't help us. Midway is not Milwaukee. And he was like, yeah, but can't you get from Chicago to Milwaukee? And I was like, sir, we did not budget for that expense. He was like, I thought there was a bus. And I was like, sir, we did not budget for that expense. It's not a free bus. And so he goes, okay, well, what about if I put you on this other one, it's going to Atlanta and then from Atlanta to Milwaukee, and that will get there tomorrow at 5 p.m. And I'm like, sir, okay, if that's all you can do. While he was discussing this with us, the flight from Denver to Milwaukee that he had originally wanted to put us on, but we couldn't because we wouldn't make the transfer, then got pushed back. And then because that got pushed back, people who were on it could no longer be on it. So now there was space on it. So we got shifted back to that flight. So
Oh,
we
that's cool.
had to leave from where we were, go down to another gate, wait. So we made it from Vegas to Denver. Transfer. We have to run because by now there's like a half hour. So we're like, oh yeah, book it. We're, you know, running down. Me and my mom and my dad. My mom and dad are both, you know, 75 years old, and we're trying to hustle down the airport to get on this flight, which we're late for. We get it. They had already closed the door. We get on. We're sitting on the plane. We're like, whoo, made it. Gonna get back to Milwaukee tonight. Because at first, when he was moving us around, it was gonna be the next day. So we get out. Plane taxis off. We get out. He goes, okay, we're gonna de-ice the plane. They start de-icing the plane. We're like, this is taking longer than we think it should. This has been 20 some minutes de-icing. De-icing is usually fairly quick. The pilot comes on and goes, well, while they were de-icing the plane, they found a situation. It should be no problem. Something froze up. We're just going to get it unfrozen. We'll be underway shortly. Another half hour goes by. He goes, folks, we're going to pull back to the gate. They're having trouble getting it thawed out. Fine. Okay. Get back to the gate. He goes, folks, we're going to have you get off the plane. The only way to get this thing unfrozen is to raise the heat inside the plane. So we're going to have to raise it to like 98 degrees in here. So we want all of you to get off. You can leave your stuff on the plane. This is going to take a little bit. So fine. We all get off. We're standing around the gate area. By now, it's an hour and a half past when we were going to leave Denver after the flight out of Denver was already delayed for an hour and a half. So by now, we're like, we were supposed to leave Denver at 7 p.m. It's now 10:30. And we're standing around, and then they come out and go, okay, we couldn't get it fixed. We found it was cracked, not frozen. So we're going to let you on 10 at a time to grab your stuff, take it off. We're going to get you a different plane. Oh, my God, fine. So then we're going on 10 people at a time, getting our stuff, bringing it back off. Then we're standing around like, okay, head down here. It is six gates down. You're going to find we got another plane for you. Well, so now we head back down the airport, which, no lie, one gate away from the gate that we had landed at coming out of Vegas, which after landing in Denver, running down, now we have to get back on. Now we're back where we started. So we get on a plane. They're like, it's great. Okay, we got everybody here. We're still going to get you to Milwaukee tonight. We're like, sure, fine. Get us out. We're like, okay, we're going to de-ice. They're de-icing, and they come on. They say, okay, well, we found an issue. Everyone on the plane is going, oh, my God. Another issue. They were like, it's a pipe. It's frozen. Don't worry. We're going to get it thawed. We're like, oh, my God. It starts pulling back to the gate. Everyone on the plane is just like, oh, what is happening? They pull back to the gate. We're waiting another 45 minutes. They get it thawed. Finally, they're like, okay, we're leaving. We're taking off. We got it now. Oh, no. Before this happens, the pilot goes, okay, we got it thawed, but here's the problem. And everyone on the craft is like, what do you mean there's another problem? He goes, the pilot, the co-pilot, all the staff, we have timed out because you know the pilots can only work a certain amount of time. And because of all the delays, he goes, we've timed out, guys. We're so sorry. We have to get off the plane. Don't worry. We have another crew coming for you. So our staff pilot, co-pilot gets off the plane. They bring another one on. We're still sitting here. And the new pilot's like, guys, we know things have been crazy. Don't worry. We're leaving. They drive us back out to the tarmac, have to de-ice the plane again. So they de-ice it again. And then we finally take off. We land in Milwaukee. We got home. I got home at 3 a.m. after in a flight that was originally supposed to land in Milwaukee 7:30. There you go. And just to prove my point, you shouldn't fly in or out of the Midwest in winter. There you go.
Probably not, but yeah, I would agree with you on that one. All right, so do you want to once again tell people how they can find Jeanette Ward?
Yeah, absolutely. You can look for me on all the socials. I'm out there on the Instagram at j.y.ward. And then on the Facebook and the Twitter, you can also find my belly dance troupe. If you'd like to keep up with us, what we're doing, and check out some performances, you can find our website at tamarindbellydance.com. You can find my movie reviews at jwardadventures.blogspot.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find my website, movierobminute.com, and you can find me on Facebook. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
And now, later!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.